Let's take a break and reconvene here at 10:30, and then we'll try to get everything closed out this morning by 11:30. Thank you.
You're not lavaliered, right? So you're here. This is the pointer? Okay. All right, we're going to get ready to start the second half of the morning session on improving operations. Our next presentation is the critical link between loader productivity, operator performance, and mining costs. Our presenter is Greg Lodwig. He's the regional manager for Mineware. A little background about Greg. He oversees Mineware's rapidly expanding North, Central, and South American operations, and he's based out of Denver, Colorado. With his extensive knowledge of dragline and shovel mining products and their application to the industry, he has overseen the expansion of Mineware to become one of North America's leading providers of mining technology for excavators. Greg's industry experience is further strengthened by his dual bachelor degrees in engineering, electrics, and information technology. How about a warm welcome for Greg?
Thank you, Steve. You guys can hear me okay out there? Perfect. Okay, I always like to start any presentation or meeting off with a safety share. For me at the moment, it's all about springtime, being in Denver, Colorado. Everyone's out there getting their gardens ready and doing mowing, putting irrigation in or whatever you're doing. We quite often forget that when we're working around the home, we need to put a bit of PPE on and protect ourselves. Simple things like safety glasses, no flip-flops when you're mowing the lawn, and just those basic common sense things that you would do in the workplace at home, try and bring them back home as well. I'm going to be talking about basically front-end efficiencies. What we're talking about is what's happening with your loading units. Mineware has extensive experience with dragline monitoring systems is our core product. And more recently, through a need in the market and request from our customers, branched out into the truck shovel space, putting monitoring systems on rope shovels and more recently, hydraulic excavators. We're going to look at payload. So a lot of you guys out there will be running strut-based payload systems. You guys are all aware of some of the limitations of strut-based payload. When you have mixed fleets, different vendors, you have aging trucks, and for every truck you have on your mine site, you now have a payload system that you have to try and maintain. Generally, the strut maintenance for having accurate payload is significantly higher than just the maintenance required to maintain the strut. So a lot of sites have to choose between how much maintenance do we put into our struts versus to get accurate payload versus just mechanical reliability of the piece of equipment. So with our payload system, the goal was to put the payload onto the digger. And obviously, you have a lot fewer diggers on the site compared to the number of trucks. So payload plan, mine plan compliance. Mine plan compliance is a critical part, as we've all talked about. We've seen a lot of presentation on drill and blast. So we're going to go in and talk about, again, why mine plan compliance is very critical to what you guys are doing out there. And pain is operator abuse, misuse. The variation we're going to see from one operator to the next. We can have two operators moving the same amount of material with the digger, but one is doing considerably more damage than the other. So how do we first manage, capture that, measure it, and then what can we do to try and reduce that and get more consistent operation? We say if you want to eliminate stress on a piece of equipment, you park it. So that's obviously not going to work for most of you guys out there. So the challenge is, what do we define as an acceptable level of stress that we're going to say We're going to accept the cost of running this piece of equipment because we understand we need to dig some dirt. And the last part is, how do we achieve all this? And it's with control. So what systems, reporting, feedback, can we put in place to provide real-time information to the operator so we're not getting to the end of the month and looking at scorecards and reports at the end of the month? You guys need leading-edge indicators, real-time information, decision support so we can make changes today. Okay, so operator influence. When you look at the mine operation from loading, haulage, crushing, conveying, process, and then to product, as you move through that process, and it'll be a little bit different for each of your operations, I think it's fair to say that the operator influence, the closer we get to the pit floor, is significantly higher as we get to the other end where we have fully automated process systems, where the operators are more in a monitoring standpoint, all the way back down to the loader, where the operator is the key critical decision maker who's driving that piece of equipment. There's automation efforts happening in the haul space that are ongoing, and on the load space, haven't really been too many automation achievements that have really changed that. So as a result, the further we are to the left, the more critical it is that we have that real-time information to the operators to provide them feedback and manage what's happening on that piece of equipment. So here is something that we see very commonly on a day-to-day basis, and I'm sure you guys have seen this as well. On the top chart we have is a payload distribution for the operator on day shift running a piece of equipment. In this case, it was a P&H 4100. Payload distribution, so we're looking at the green is between 95 and 110%, very few overloads and minimal underloads. Very next shift, next operator comes in and we get this sort of thing. Overloads and significant underloads. So how can you guys have control and predictable feed going into your crush, your mill, your process when you have this sort of payload distribution happening from one shift to the next? And as we all know, light trucks are a waste of time, money, and fuel, and heavy trucks obviously damage equipment and causes bunching. It causes all sorts of things that dispatch has to try and manage. So how can we give the feedback to the operator on board the shovel to try and get consistent loading, about putting that process in place so you can guys have that more predictable outcome that's happening outside the pit? So the goal is, with payload, is to tighten the bell curve, get the guys loading and girls loading more consistently, minimize the overloads, and minimize the underloads. Now the only way you can achieve that in real time is with real-time, bucket-by-bucket payload feedback, okay? As you guys know, one of the limitations, again, with the truck-based payload system is that the only time they get a true indication on payload is second gear reweigh. And by that point, the truck's already rolled out. Do they come back? They've either got a dump at the face if they're overloaded or they're on their way, okay? We see time and time again that when your only KPI is that you're giving operators on a loading unit is bucket counts on drag lines or truck counts on shovels, the natural thing to do is when the next truck comes in is kick the other one out, okay? Because that's what they're getting scored on. So it encourages a behavior of three-quarter full truck, next one's in, kick it out, and it generally happens more on night shift than day shift, but we see it time and time again. What we need to be looking at is providing operators with a balanced scorecard. Truck counts, very important. Payload compliance is very important. And then we need to start balancing that up with stress. Okay, and that goes to the pain bit we're going to talk about later in the presentation. Same time, we don't want operators tearing up your piece of equipment just to meet your truck count requirement. This one's a little bit hard to see, but We've done some interesting work up in Alberta with TransAlta Highvale, looking at when you're three-pass loading or four-pass loading, looking at the difference between the first pass and the last pass. So with the truck-based payload systems, we now have the opportunity to break down all parts of the cycle and look at where we're most efficient and where the biggest area for opportunity for return is on changing the behavior of what the operator's doing. Interestingly, we find on the first pass, which is over on the right, generally the operator's generally gonna load that bucket very well. It's usually when they're weighed on truck, they have more time to do it, and they've positioned themselves in a new position in the cut, and you're gonna get a nice full bucket on the first pass. The third pass, with shovel-based payload feedback, so we're doing that pass-by-pass feedback, your third or last pass, the last pass, shouldn't necessarily be a full bucket. If you're chasing payload compliance, the last bucket should be to hit target. So we don't necessarily want to look at payload on the last pass, and that's when we start looking at fleet matching, making sure that your shovel and your trucks are correctly sized. We see a lot of cases where you have mixed fleets on sites. So we have a customer has 282s, and they've also got the Komatsu 930Es. When the operators go from loading one type to the other, they're in that rhythm where they're just loading trucks, and it's very hard for them on an individual basis to change their loading behavior as they go from one truck to the next, and they might switch 100 times during the shift. So it's about, again, how do we provide feedback to the operator that provides truck-specific payload targets and loading feedback, okay? The middle pass, just lastly on the middle pass, so that's anything between the first and the last pass. We have customers with smaller hydraulic excavators that might be up to 9 passing, some of the bigger trucks. The biggest area for improvement with fill factor and cycle time are those middle passes, because we've taken out lots of time to load the first one. On the last one, we're not necessarily looking for a full bucket, but it's those cycles in between that is the best opportunity for getting the extra production out of the piece of equipment. And again, that's where we have to have loading system on board the digger to provide that feedback to the operator. I believe there's a video here. This never works, so that's excellent. So we've got our first pass in, second pass in. What we're doing is we're heading up to target here, so we've got 139 tons remaining. We're currently loading RD13, and this is the amount of material that we've got left to put in. So it's this real-time pass-by-pass feedback that you have to be able to give to your operators to help them achieve that loading. The identification of the particular truck that you're loading and its target class. How many guys have you guys got a particular truck out there and you've got 3 different types of bed on that truck, right? Theoretically, they should each have a target payload depending on what you're trying to achieve with that bed. When you have this type of feedback, you then have an opportunity to help the operator load those trucks within very tight tolerances to manage the different types of beds that you have out there, okay? I'll go through a quick case study here. We have a couple of systems deployed with Centinela, an AMSA company down in Chile. They were purely looking at payload, so no high-precision GPS or anything like that. We put the system on a 4100, and when we put a system in, we don't come in and try and give you analysis of where you should be based on some theoretical analysis or some study that we've done in Australia based on your haul circuit. We want to work with your actuals. What are you guys doing today with the equipment you have, in the pit you have, with the operators and the training that you're able to provide them? So we do a blind study. We run the system with the screen blacked out for the first month and capture a baseline data to say, this is what you're doing right now, regardless of what anyone thinks is happening. And it's always an interesting conversation once you provide actuals with what perception is. But that's what we use for our baseline. Step two, turn the display on, give that operator that real-time feedback, and show how with that real-time feedback to the operator, very quickly, we need to change their behavior, provide them the feedback so they can accurately load each and individual truck, regardless of the bed, the class, and what mixed fleet you're running. So, goal is tighten the bell curve. So the shaded out was before, the solid bars are the after. So we saw a 0.3 reduction in overloads. Thankfully, not a lot of overloading was going on, but you can see a big part of their problem was underloading. And again, we see time and time again where you have endemic underloading at your site. It's because of those cultures of a single KPI basing operators' performance on truck counts. They're incentivized to kick out 3/4 full trucks to get the truck counts at the end of the shift. Okay? So using the feedback, we got a 4% reduction in underloads, and importantly, we were trucks within their compliance area went up 8%. So how do we do this? You saw a quick video of that real-time feedback we're providing to the operator. We have a bunch of KPIs that we're using as well. Not only are we looking at how fast is the operator loading the shovel, but equally balanced with production has to be the stress. So how much stress are you putting in the machine for the production you're returning to the business? So getting down some more figures here, basically looking at the before afters. Again, significant differences in opportunity between the different class truck classes, 930Es versus the 797s. And again, we see this time and time again where you have mixed fleets of trucks, you will have significant differences between how the operators are loading the different types of trucks without that real-time feedback. Okay, so we've talked about payload. The next part of the puzzle is plan, mine plan compliance. You want real-time feedback, accurate feedback, and reliable feedback. There are a lot of technologies out there that require mobile LiDAR stations to be taken around, doing periodic scans. We had UAVs that were doing long-term flights. The technology is getting better with the high precision, the self-launching, so we're able to reduce that time frame down with those supporting technologies. What we're doing here is trying to provide bucket-by-bucket real-time feedback. So on dragline, that involves LiDAR technology, and on the rope shovels, having tooth-level accuracy of where the teeth are and up, and basically calculating surfaces as we go against mine plan and subtracting that back and showing the material removed. So who needs to care about compliance? For a long time we thought that maintenance wasn't necessarily concerned about plan compliance. Very recently we were at Prodeco in Colombia, and the maintenance manager stood up and said, I care about plan compliance, and I'm from maintenance, because if I don't have a good floor in the bottom of the pit, it's tearing my trucks up. So plan compliance is important for everybody in the organization, whether it's oil recovery, floor control, scheduling. We've got this material we have to move. If we don't get it out, follow plan, we either overdig or underdig. It kills our scheduling, okay? Interactions, scheduling, hard rock, multi-benching, blast activities. If we're not achieving plan compliance and not doing it on time, it slows down everything we're doing. And drill and blast, we had a presentation here earlier today about how critical drill and blast is to the operation. And again, if we're not achieving plan compliance, when you have this sort of level of information and a stress index for every bucket of material that was taken, we can start feeding that information back into drill and blast and helping them make better decisions about hole spacing, powder factor, and obviously scheduling as well. Oil recovery, It's very important for hard rock operations. Our background is more strongly in coal operations. Coal's easy. When you see that black stuff, you stop digging and probably start putting it somewhere else. Hard rock is a completely different environment. So ore control is critical, and you have to have real-time, tooth-accurate systems on board your shovels to be able to do ore control effectively. Pain. So we've talked about payload, plan. Let's talk about pain. How many times have you guys been on a shovel and thought, wow, this shovel is really in bad shape? It must have 20 teeth missing off the swing pinion. It's just a terrible piece of equipment. Then the operators change over, and it's a completely different piece of equipment. How do you guys manage the variation from one operator to the next? What we have here is some strain gauge feedback from two operators performing exactly the same work in the same dig and the same payload. And this here is damage to your equipment. The analogy I like to use is you can take a piece of fencing wire, hang it from your barn on a rafter, pick your engine block up, hook it up, and we'll hold that engine block there until your barn burns down or the piece of wire rusts through. A shovel and a drag line are designed to pick up and hold a weight. Have an RSL, as long as you don't see that, that's what they're designed to do. But what happens is that vibration is that bending and shaking in the boon in the superstructure. So I can take that same piece of fencing wire, bend it backwards and forwards, and very simply, I can break it in half, but it can hold a 200-pound engine block up. So what we're measuring here and feeding back to the operator is that bending backwards and forwards. So you can have an operator very effectively move the same amount of dirt as another operator, but put significantly less fatigue life into the piece of equipment. So how do we manage that and provide that feedback to the operator in real time to change their behavior? This is a very interesting metric we've seen come out of Canada again, is stress per ton. So while for those operations that need to produce more, and not everybody at the moment is trying to produce more, it may be reducing your costs while maintaining the same productivity. But for those operations who want to push their shovels harder, with the right stress feedback to the operator on board, we can increase production and reduce your stress per ton. So while the stress has gone up per cycle, for the material the shovel's moving, it's actually gone down. And this goes back to my original comment. If you want to eliminate stress on a piece of equipment, you park it. But what's an acceptable level of stress for the amount of work we're asking this piece of equipment to do? So how do we control this? We very commonly see over 25% variation between your best operator and the worst operator. This is in stress index on this one as well. So one operator is putting 25% more stress in this piece of equipment than the best operator. And we see this time and time again on every site, on every piece of equipment, whether it's a drag line, hydraulic, or a rope shovel. How do we control that and try and get unified performance from our operators? And then if we're still damaging our piece of equipment, we can say, okay, is there something wrong with the equipment? Have we done our service intervals? Is there a blast problem? Do we have hard digging down here? But until you can get your operators running a piece of equipment consistently, you have a 25% or more variation from one operator to the next. So, real-time feedback. Color-coded feedback to the operator. Simple, red, yellow, green. When you get a red, you are running in the bottom 10% of what this machine is capable of. It doesn't matter if it's payload compliance, the stress index, your swing angle, your fill time. Looking at the whole picture of the shovel, because again, when you have onboard shovel-based payload, you're doing fill, swing, dump, turn, you can measure every component of the cycle. So providing color-coded feedback, it's very simple. If I'm in the red, I'm in the bottom 10% of what the machine is capable of. And that is what we call peer pressure. That's peer assessment. It means 90% of the time, the rest of the people who run this piece of equipment are doing better than me. So that is how we have been very successful in getting operators to change their behavior. And again, it's anonymous. It doesn't say Joe Blow or John Smith is doing this. It's saying relative to what everyone else on this piece of equipment is doing, this is where you're at. So when we do that blind study, you do a month's worth of data, establish a baseline, then come in and put the color coding based on what was the distribution of what you were doing during the blind study. Now we're going to try and improve you guys from there. It's no good going in with some theoretical analysis that came out of some university in Australia and saying, well, this is a, you know, a Hitachi 5500, this is what you should be doing. Nope, peer-based feedback based on what they're doing on that piece of equipment. And it's different. You can have two operating units with consecutive serial numbers, and the targets will be different on each piece of equipment. So, scorecards. These are the scorecards that we've been using with great success. We do a score out of five. I'll just cover the first few. Operator versus the target. So how's the operator performing against management's target? The second one is how's the operator comparing against the machine? So how am I comparing against my peers? We can always have management come along and set an unrealistic target. So they may not be able to beat the target, but if they're beating their peers, they're one of the good operators and they're doing their part to get to the target. This is what we want to see. So this is cycle time. We do cycle time, stress index, swing angle, fill time, payload, truck payload compliance. We've gone from a one KPI system, which was truck counts, to looking at the entire part of the shovel cycle, okay? And this is what we're looking to achieve. This is 12 months feedback, heading on cycle time, trending down, reduce, 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 okay? So you can see how the operator is performing against the piece of equipment and where they're heading in time. You can also see this is our number one operator. If I was operator number two, this one would be highlighted. I only have to decrease my cycle time by 0.3 seconds next month to become number one operator. Now, we all say we don't like to rank the operators against each other, but in honesty, what we've seen, if you provide them the information in an anonymous, helpful way, they appreciate the feedback because they actually don't know where their strengths and weaknesses are. So that's it. The last thing I want to say is that with operator feedback, it is about identifying what an operator's worst at. If operator looks at their scorecard and their worst thing is their stress index, that's what we need to focus on and train them on. If you focus on their cycle time, which is already nice and short, you're going to get limited return for your investment with the cycle time by putting a lot of training into that. Again, I like my analogies. Usain Bolt going to the Olympics. He's 3 weeks out. He's running under 10 seconds. In his last couple of weeks of training, he's probably trying to shave 3 or 4 hundredths of a second off his time in final training. You can take me. I'm not much of a sprinter. Out to the track for those same 3 weeks, I might start off at 18 seconds and I might get down to 16 seconds, 2 seconds shaved off in the same period of time. So with those scorecards, if we can identify what an operator's worst at and put those KPIs and the color-coded feedback in front of them, that's your best bang for buck for return on changing the way the operator's using that piece of equipment as opposed to focusing what they're already good at. But you have to have onboard shovel monitoring system that's doing bucket by bucket breakdown to be able to know what they're bad at. Thank you.
Greg, thank you. Do we have any questions?
Which kind of instrumentation do you use for getting the payload data?
Good question. So it varies on the type of equipment. On drag lines, we use a strain gauge based payload system. On rope shovel, it's also strain gauge. And then on the hydraulics, it's using hydraulic pressure.
As a follow-up, Jeff Hall with ASARCO. I was going to ask the same question. You talked about the difficulties maintaining truck-mounted sensors. Tell me a little bit about maintenance calibration required for the excavator-mounted sensors.
On hydraulic?
On like a rope shovel.
Okay. Yep, so we use a strain gauge-based system that's welded on, so it's not glue or epoxy. It's welded onto the A-frame of the shovel. And I should say spot welded. No one likes to hear welding on a shovel's superstructure. But we do an initial calibration up front. We like to do a weigh scale with some truckloads going over some scales to really dial it in and get high precision. At that point, the system's calibrated. We use an auto tear return system. So on the return swing, we're tearing out. And based on that, we're able to essentially have a calibrationless system. As long as you guys are setting your rope limits on your hoist and your crowd is calibrated, the system repeats itself. It's very accurate.
What percent accuracy you're seeing?
We guarantee plus or minus 3% with a weigh scale validation with trucks. Without it, it's about 10%.
Thank you,
Rick. Thank you.
Does this system work with any, like Flanders or P&H or any of those systems?
Yes. So one of our advantages is that we're able to stick our system on any type of dragline, rope, shovel, hydraulic excavator, OEM independent. Draglines, you know, they've all got a PLC on them, so do the big rope shovels. We just need an interface in there on the rope shovels to get crowd and hoist position. Other than that, the system is completely sensored on our end. On the hydraulic shovels, there's no need for any PLC. We're getting all the instrumentation back off pressure sensors along your test points. Back at the end of the boom where all your hydraulic lines come into the house.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Greg.